This is Air Commander Starscream, and you are listening to Half Measures. Half Measures? Sounds like Megatron's battle strategy.
Kia ora, welcome in to episode 194 of Half Measures. I'm once again joined by my friend and co-host, Dan Whiting King. Kia ora, Dan.
Kia ora, Paul. How are you tonight?
Very well, very well. It's getting hot. I'll tell you what, summer's here. It's time to start moaning. But before I get detracted into the weather, tell me the story.
I was thinking before this podcast started, Paul, you know, I feel like we've had some great conversation about like smorgasbords and, you know, places to eat. So in the weekend, we had a friend visiting and we were on our way out to dinner to like this really great pizza place that we know. And we were probably, I don't know, 100 meters from there. And this conversation started in the car about Cobb & Co. and how like great Cobb & Co. was when you were a kid. I don't know whether this translates for you, Paul. But Cobb & Co. growing up was like a real core Kiwi experience. Yeah. I still have fond memories of like, you know, when Dad would come home from work and he'd be like, should we go out for dinner tonight? And it'd just be like, it'd be the stars have aligned, magic is happening. And so anyway, we're talking about Cobb & Co. and we're like, oh, we've actually got a Cobb & Co. here. And we literally almost did like one of those movie style 360, like in the street. And we went to Cobb & Co. instead of going to get this like guaranteed pizza, high quality, good meal. And I'll tell you, Paul, it was one of the best meals I've had in a very long time. It was like they've really embraced like the nostalgic factors of Cobb & Co. Like for example, have you been to Cobb & Co. before? I sort of get deep into the menu and the.
I have, and I also have come to appreciate through a number of stories the sort of thing you're referring to from a childhood memory too.
Yeah, so as a child, like the things. So first of all, you'd always get Cobb Crunchies, which are basically like those little like fried chip type things, which are always just a novelty, always fun. If you were really lucky, and it wasn't always a given, like you might be able to get like one of the cocktails, like a traffic light or a Pink Panther, and that was always good, but only one, so you had to make it last. And they've got all these things still on the menu, and it's honestly Cobb Crunchies, delicious. A Pink Panther, delicious. And they've got like Cobb bread with like garlic butter, and oh, honestly, Paul, highly recommended. This podcast isn't sponsored by Cobb & Co., but it should
wondering.
Be because. Look, I can't get over how good it was. Like, I really went into it. I'm like, oh, this is going to be terrible. It's going to be a bit of a dive. It's not going to be great, but had a fantastic time. Would recommend.
Brilliant. It's interesting because I find there's very few sort of places that have that sort of charm that you've described there. And I'll tell you what it's not. It's not Breakers. And I think it's underrated, and I feel like it's a lovely night out, and it'll be somewhere I'll be happy to take kids.
It's interesting. Like I'm not going to tell you what time we went in there. It was quite early on a Saturday night, but by the time we left, it was packed, and it was packed with the same crowd of people that would normally go to the smorgasbord restaurant that I talked about previously. So there's obviously some good crossover here, but I think there's something special about it. I think it's definitely better than your Breakers, but I ate well last weekend. That's what I can say.
I love that. Well, get along to your nearest Cobb & Co. or book at cobb.co.nz. Definitely not sponsored, right?
Definitely not sponsored.
So, Dan, from sponsorship to television, have you consumed any movies or TV shows this week, perchance?
I have indeed. So, I actually have I've got a couple of, I'm just going to call it out right now, a couple of low quality movies to share with you, and we've also got a couple of joint watches to share. So I'll share my movies and then we'll come back to the joint watches after you've shared what you've been watching. So again, let me set the scene. It's Sunday afternoon, it's pouring with rain, we're kind of like just flicking through the various services and we're like, maybe we'll just check out a couple of, like, we know they're going to be terrible movies, because we were kind of, like, doing a bit of, like, online Christmas shopping and, you know, just something in the background. I can't even believe I'm bringing – I actually said to Samara with this first movie, I don't even want to bring this to the pod, and she was like, you've got to do it. So here I am bringing it to the pod. This is a 2023 movie on Prime Video, and it is called Xmas. Now – I would put it in the romantic comedy category. It's in the top 10 of Prime Video, just so you know. Like, it wasn't a first choice for me, but it was like, you know what? It's Christmas. Let's put on a Christmas movie and let's see what this is all about. I don't even know where to begin with this, Paul. So let me give you kind of the rundown of the story. So we've got our main character, who's a cousin of Stephen Amell. His name's Robbie Amell. And basically he can't go to his family Christmas because he's got a real big wig developer job and he's got to get like this game finished before Christmas. His family's sort of real sad about it, and he decides to surprise them for Christmas. He's recently, about 6 months ago, broken up with his fiance. He arrives at the family's house, finds out that when he wasn't turned up for Christmas, they invited his fiance. And it's sort of like, thus begins the kind of like who rightfully should be there. The family love the fiance. They also, obviously, he's the son, so he's kind of got like the, you know, expectation that he can be there. And thus beginning a terrible movie for 1 hour and 33 minutes. The acting, pretty average. The plot, pretty average. I don't know whether I had a good or a bad time, but we made it to the end. It kind of ticks the box for a Christmas movie. I think the biggest challenge with this movie is like I can do a trashy movie, but just there's no real chemistry between a lot of the characters, so it's a little stiff. So, look, I don't want to give this more airtime than it deserves, but Xmas on Prime Video, I don't know. You could probably do better.
Well, my question is, how has this got into, you said it was in the Prime top, was it in the?
Top 10.
Like, I know, I mean, you and I recently moved from Movie of the Week to Watch of the Week for a number of reasons, but one of those reasons was, there was just a bit of a lack of quality movies out there, but if this is in the top 10 and that's your review of it, what's interesting is I don't know, and this isn't necessarily a bad thing, it's just simply an observation, I don't know any of the first 12 names I can see as cast. I don't know the writer, I don't know the director, so I literally have nothing to go off of other than a poster and what you're telling me, so you certainly haven't sold it to me.
I think there is a place for these movies, like I think that if it wasn't a Christmas movie, this would be absolutely unbearable. But the fact that it kind of had a little bit of Christmas charm and we were doing a bit of Christmas shopping in the background, it kind of was okay. But it's definitely not a recommended watch. It's like half a gun for me. So that was the first one, just to really sort of rip the Band-Aid off. The next movie we chucked on, now this movie is also available on Prime Video and in the top 10, also available on Neon, it's a movie I've kind of been like loosely interested in, but not enough to sort of go to the movies or rent it. It's 65, starring Adam Driver. And this is a science fiction movie. The premise here is an astronaut crash lands on a mysterious planet, only to discover he's not alone. Is this on your radar at all, Paul? Know anything about this one?
No, but you had me with the first four words, an astronaut crash lands. I mean, straight away, I'm in.
It's got all the trigger words right. And look, Adam Driver's great. Like, I'm a real big Adam Driver fan.
Yeah. Oh, Paul. Blimey.
I know.
Does this rate next to Xmas? Straight away, tell me that.
For me, it was probably, it's maybe about a one or a one and a half gun. Okay. Like, it's a little bit better, but it's unfortunately just a movie that, it's kind of got potential, but it is kind of terrible at the same time. So, okay, again, let me give you a bit of a premise, and hopefully I'll save you another hour 33 and maybe having to watch it. So, Adam Driver basically drives a cargo spaceship. He's taking people who are in, like, deep freeze, whatever you want to call it, cryogenic, you know, transport them to somewhere else. They hit an asteroid field, crash land on a planet. Most of the people, as you would imagine, die, step out of the ship. It's just basically a big forest planet, and it's filled with dinosaurs. So
brilliant.
Basically, he needs to try and get to like one of the escape crafts. He needs to like radio for help. It becomes a perilous mission, basically with him and one of the people that turns out to be alive on the ship, and they kind of work their way through the forest, fighting off various sort of dinosaurs in the progress. Meanwhile, asteroids, meteorites are starting to kind of rain down. It feels like it should be good with some of the things that I'm saying.
Yep.
I think it's a movie that, you know, you have a movie where there's just like one or two actors and they can it's such a good story that they kind of carry it and you feel it, but there was just like an emptiness to this movie, and I don't know what it was, because the plot's kind of like there or thereabouts. It's got the keywords, it's got Adam Driver. It's not necessarily like the effects are good. It just, the story just kind of really lacked any sort of heart and soul to really get me kind of like, yep, this is great, I'm having a good time. In fact, if I had to choose to sit down and watch one of these, I might even choose Xmas. I don't know, just because at least it kind of had a little bit more of something going on. This just felt so empty, and it's such a shame because, as I say, I can see what they were going for and what they were hoping for, but unfortunately a bit of a miss for me.
That's quite incredible. Not just because Adam Driver, you know, absolutely top tier. We've seen him in a number of things and he just gets better and better, and you'd think his agent would know how to spot a good, but also this is written and directed by Scott Beck and Brian Woods. These are the guys who brought us The Quiet Place. And the sequels, and they've proven themselves to deliver quality scripts. Maybe they're better in movies where there's less talking, like The Quiet Place, than something like this, because I watched the trailer, you know, just on silent while you were talking, just to get a feel as you were talking, as I often do. You've also got Sam Raimi producing, you know, from Spider-Man fame. Shocking.
Yeah, like it's weird, isn't it? It's like all the parts were there. I don't know whether it was Adam Driver's character just not interesting enough. Was it just kind of like, it's one of those movies where they kind of give you a 2 minute kind of intro into like the drivers for his character, and then it kind of just, you know, you're kind of straight into it. But I don't know, it failed to remain interesting and compelling. There's a few good sort of like jump scares, and there's obviously some great moments with dinosaurs, but yeah, unfortunately a bit of a miss. And this is the type of movie I 100% would have recommended for movie of the week back in the day. So
that's right. And I would have picked it too. So
yeah, look, so that's two movies. As I say, this is available also on Prime Video, also available on Neon. Like, these two movies did their job in terms of just being like a good casual watch, nothing too serious. But yeah, unfortunately, a bit of a pass. So the other things for me are joint watches this week. So what about you, Paul?
Wow. Well, that was quite an adventure, Dan. So I'm going to revert to type here, unsurprisingly. And the first thing I'm going to bring you will be the second Doctor Who special, following on from last week. This is Wild Blue Yonder, the second special in the David Tennant 60th anniversary special series. In this, the TARDIS takes the Doctor and Donna to the furthest edge of adventure, to the edge of the universe where the stars disappear and there's just nothingness, like black. To escape, they must face the most desperate fight of their lives with the fate of the universe at stake. And in a nutshell, because I know you didn't watch this one this time around, I would say, and it looks like the ratings certainly agree with me, this was definitely a step up story-wise from the first one. The first one you and I both enjoyed. We talked about it being fun a lot. This one was more mystery, more me trying to figure out what's happening here. And without too many spoilers, because it's sort of in the photos and in all the social medias, basically the Donna and Doctor are split up and they each have a counterpart, which looks like the other. So you've got the real Doctor with a fake Donna and you've got the real Donna with a fake Doctor. And when the four of them are all together and they're all trying to convince each other they're the real ones, it's really hard to spot. Obviously, it's the same actor and actress, so that doesn't help you. But in terms of what they're saying, it's a really interesting dilemma and very, very well written. I couldn't figure out who was the real one or not. It was there was a few unexpected story directions, a couple of times, which I really like. I think there's nothing worse than when you can see a story panning out and you know, the last second, oh, the doctor's going to come in and save the day. Well, that didn't happen, and it really keeps me on my toes. So, I really enjoyed Wild Blue Yonder.
And how's it feeling? Is it still feeling good to be back with David Tennant and Catherine Tate? Is it still on point?
100%. If anything, it was a little bit even more because, you know, in this episode, Donna is now fully back as herself. You know, there's no more of her memory stuff. And so this episode is the first time for us to see those characters reconnect fully for a whole, a whole episode of, you know, an hour, basically. So yeah, there was a lot in there that was really, really good. I don't want to talk spoilers because it's still quite new and I know there'll be people out there wanting to watch it. But yeah, essentially, top quality. It did take a little bit of time to get going, like into the story proper. Like 10 minutes in, I was thinking, where are we going? You know, if this was a podcast, I would be starting to listen to it at 1.25 speed. You know, when you get that sort of, come on, let's get moving. But it really did pick up. And by the end of it, I would say it's one of my favorite David Tennant Who stories in his entire sort of, if you go all the way back to his original run, I think it was right up there because it was just clever and just, you know, if there was suddenly another one of you and me on the call with us right now, just trying to work out for you, which is the real Paul, and they're both giving you legitimate answers, but you've got to pick, you can only pick one and the other. It's just real simple story writing. So that was really good. My other complaint, and I'm going to sound a little bit boomerish here, but I am stuck in my ways on some things. And one of the things I'm stuck on is the TARDIS exterior, you know, the blue box. That is a real thing. It's solid. It has to be real. It's wooden. If you lean on it on set, it's going to take your weight no problem. It's a real solid TARDIS. And so that's been the case right from the 1963 start. But whenever I see a CGI TARDIS, as clever as the scene might be that they're trying to do, no matter how well the scene, maybe it might be as funny, the TARDIS at the top of a tree wobbling or whatever, as soon as I can see it CGI, it's gone and the magic's gone. And we've talked about this before with poor CGI in Star Wars, like when Yoda wasn't too good or Jabba wasn't too good in the original 97 special editions. Sometimes they don't get the special effects quite right. And that was my biggest complaint, was occasional CGI of the TARDIS just didn't work. But that's my only real complaint. Another quick note, there was a really lovely unexpected cameo from Bernard Cribbins coming back into Doctor Who. He recently passed away last year, and he's sort of a bit of a he's got a real reputation as being in it. He's been in Doctor Who in the original. He's been in it now as Wilfred Mott. He also starred alongside Peter Cushing's Doctor Who in the 1960s movie. And they managed to film one last cameo with him, which I had no idea was coming. I knew he passed away last year, and then all of a sudden he turned up. It was lovely.
It's a bit like that Lance Reddick. Scene. And that's right.
Really nice. Oh, so good.
That's all awesome. Good. So one more episode in the special. Do you think that episode's going to start the crossover process to the next Doctor?
I don't believe so, and that's because I know we have the Christmas Day special coming too.
Oh, okay.
Which will be unrelated to this trilogy or whatever. I may be getting this wrong, but I know we've got these three, then the Christmas Day. And I think on Christmas Day, my gut feel is we will say goodbye to this mini David Tennant reincarnation who's come back for a couple of specials. I believe on Christmas Day this year he'll be at the door and we'll be into our 15th Doctor, but who knows? Who knows?
Time will tell. That's very good. I'm glad you've enjoyed it. I'm glad it seems like an improvement on last week's, which I still thought was fun.
Oh, it was. Last week's was awesome. That's the level I want to put it at in terms of me saying it's one of my favourite David Tennant stories. Really top quality, yeah.
Nice.
What have I got next? So Doctor Who, from there into The Dark Knight. So Doctor Who and Batman, this is why I say I was reverting to type. I've carried on to the second of the Christopher Nolan trilogy rewatch of the 2008 movie, The Dark Knight, which, of course, as I alluded to last week, is the menace that is the Joker wreaking havoc and chaos on Gotham, and Batman taking him on in a real battle, psychological battle, a real test of his physical abilities to fight injustice. This movie probably needs no introduction. It's got 2.8 million votes on IMDb and is sitting at 9 out of 10. It is absolutely epic. And the first thing I want to say straight away is it just has not aged at all. It's absolutely incredible in terms of the quality of this from every production standpoint. This movie is every bit as equal of any 2023 movie or of a similar nature in terms of the look and feel. It just hasn't aged at all. It's incredible.
Look, you've been sending me Snapchats throughout your rewatch of this, and there's so many memorable moments in this film, and there's so many memes, there's so many great characters. I'm so glad to hear that it still stands the test of time. And I would imagine it's probably quite nice going from Batman Begins to The Dark Knight.
Yeah. What is interesting is I remember, as I said last week, thinking that the second and third movies were better than the first. I really did enjoy Batman Begins a whole lot more than I thought I might. I still think The Dark Knight edges it slightly, but not as big a jump as I was expecting. I think the initial watch of The Dark Knight is the real watch that really gets you, you know, the one you remember. And that's possibly true with so many movies, of course. But I think, you know, we can't go past the Joker, the Heath Ledger performance as the Joker. We've been privileged to have so many great Jokers, and we've talked about them over the years. But this movie is a stark reminder of the extraordinary Joker that he brought into the Batman universe. And it was only a few weeks ago, you know, we were talking about Joaquin Phoenix. And I would say that whilst both have this dark edge, there is no doubt that this is the most sadistic and sinister, intimidating, just outright terrifying Joker of them all.
Just imagine if Heath Ledger had still sort of been around. Like, I don't know whether he would have been in the third movie or not. Like, there's probably a bunch of internet lore about all of that, but he truly was something amazing. Even now, I'm on the IMDb page, and the trailer is kind of frozen on his face, and it's just it's so well done.
It really is. It's it was an extraordinary performance, and just so sad, so tragic what happened with Heath Ledger. I did want to mention one thing then quickly, and this is, you know, given that I only watched Batman Begins last week, in the space of less than a week, Netflix decided, for whatever reason, I've never understood the economics of how licenses work, but they removed all three of the Nolan trilogy movies from Netflix. So that put pay to me being able to do this rewatch just through a streaming service. So we had to dig out the copy we had on Blu-ray and hook up the old PlayStation. And I have to admit, sometimes I think the one advantage of Blu-ray is over some streaming services, you get absolute quality definition. And in some ways, I think that's really worked to our advantage. It is a more complex story than Batman Begins. I think that has positives and negatives. You know, the positives are that it tries more, it pushes the limits. It's not as simple of the origin story of a traumatized child that wants to fight crime. You know, there's no establishing of the character. The negative side of it for me, there's a few criticisms I came up with because I thought, you know, keep the balance. And that is maybe it's over complicated at times. And that I would say straight away is that this movie is too long. 15 minutes, 20 minutes, I don't know about 30 minutes, but at least 20 minutes potentially could be, you could feel it. And I think the ending, it kind of reminds me of when a movie, you think it's about to end, there's multiple times you think it's going to end, but then there's another scene and then there's another, and then it gets to the point where you start to distrust that the scene you're watching will be the final scene, and all of a sudden, obviously, one of them is. It kind of reminds me of, I was trying to think of a movie, Return of the King, I think it was one, maybe The Terminator. Get in touch if you can think of any movies that, you know, that were ending. Maybe The Last Jedi, I don't know, that you thought, oh, that's the final scene, and then they played another scene.
The latest Hunger Games prequel, which has about 500 endings.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yep. It's like, there was maybe too many endings, but look, that's about the only negative I could come up with this. I just think it's just really astonishing. There was a change of actress for the character of Rachel Dawes, So Katie Holmes was replaced by Maggie Gyllenhaal. When I'm not done enough research to know why that is. I thought she was good in this role. I thought Katie Holmes was good in the role. So I don't know what the story was there. And Aaron Eckhart is the other big addition to this one as the DA Harvey Dent. And I just thought he was absolutely superb as Harvey Dent. And I'm sure that people like Tommy Lee Jones probably looks on this role and wonders what could have been for him if he was in a Christopher Nolan movie rather than Joel Schumacher. And I imagine Billy Dee Williams also looks wondering what could have happened if his Harvey Dent could have taken on this story arc. But yeah, he's superb in this.
I think, and I think I said this last week, but I think we're so fortunate to have Christopher Nolan come and direct a series like this. It just seems like almost today unfathomable that he would even touch this sort of franchise. But the fact that he kind of did is amazing.
I think that's what excites me about the idea of Christopher Nolan potentially, if the rumors are true, going to Bond. Because I think about movies like Interstellar, which is like a top 10 movie for me, movies that we've watched like Tenet and enjoyed, movies like, Inception or Dunkirk, or it's just, there's so many. And I just feel like you're right. We are lucky that we had him come in to work in a franchise that's one of our favorites.
I would love him for a 3-movie take on Bond. Yep. Sign me up.
Imagine it.
Yep.
So that's the Dark Knight, available if you've got it on Blu-ray or wherever it might be streaming.
I was thinking about this, and I wonder if, because just recently they've brought Pattinson's Batman out on Netflix, I wonder whether there was some type of licensing, or actually we don't want to confuse people with the different Batmans and how it's all connected, because they're both very dark and gritty. So,
oh, for sure.
I wonder if maybe it's just coincidence, but maybe there's something to kind of tidy up the Bat catalogue.
Certainly has wet the Bat catalogue. I see what you did there. Certainly has wet the appetite for the Dark Knight Rises, which I'm worried about in terms of runtime there, because I'm saying that this one's too long, and it just looked now the Dark Knight Rises is the better part of 3 hours. So let's see how I go with that one next week. But that's me for this week, Dan. We can move into our watch of the week.
Yeah, well, you're in for a treat tonight, viewers, because we've got two watches of the week. So the one we'll start with, this is an unscheduled in our Discord channel, is Slow Horses. So this is a series that you and I both loved season one. Paul, it's been a little while since you watched season two, so let me just give you a little bit of a recap here. So Slow Horses is on Apple TV, and it basically follows a team of British intelligence agents who they've messed something up in their career, and they've been put into this office called kind of Slough House, and it's full of kind of misfits, and it's funny probably seeing someone like Gary Oldman in The Dark Knight, and then see him running Slough House, and he's honestly such a fantastic character. He's a real kind of he's obviously been a fantastic spy throughout his career, but he drinks, he smokes, he hasn't seen an iron or probably a shower in a long time. So he often comes across as a bit of a degenerate, but he's very good at what he does.
Loves a curry.
Loves a curry. Who doesn't? So season two, these are really great kind of 6-episode watches, really easy to get into. They often start off with a sort of a hiss and a roar, and there's a great story behind it. But season two, it kind of builds on some of the things from season one. But this time, the real threat in the story is a former agent, basically. There's a whole bunch of Russian dealings. They're tracking down sort of Cold War issues and betrayal. There's all sorts of competition amongst the agents of Slough House and just wider MI5. And it's just a really sort of interesting story. Like one of our main characters, River Cartwright, who kind of plays more the young up and coming spy. Yeah, he really wants to be, you know, sort of James Bond. Like he thinks of himself as that type of spy. He is sort of headstrong, gets himself involved in all sorts of things, sometimes without the right training and support. And then we've got Gary Oldman, who plays Jackson Lamb, who's trying to sort of manage this ragtag cohort of people, equally trying to stop them from sort of stuffing up along the way. But this is a really good spy thriller that in general, like, you know, when we talk about shows to watch with your parents, this could be right up there as one of them.
Oh, it 100% is. I mean, that's a really good synopsis. And the Gary Oldman, just to come back to that quickly, because of course, you know, I didn't even mention him when talking about The Dark Knight, because there's so much going on there. But you and I talked about Gary Oldman off air midweek, you know, about how great he is and how does he go from playing, you know, Commissioner Gordon to a character like this and all the other things throughout his career. And I made the bold statement that I would have him in my top 10 actors of all time. And I was just watching the little video play there and just sort of seeing he is extraordinary. I think that could be a future podcast for us, top 10 actors, who knows. He is extraordinary in that lead role as Jackson Lamb. And I think it's the relationship of him and River Cartwright together that I think is at the very, very heart of what makes this such an awesome show. And I really liked in this second season that we had more crossover between Jackson Lamb and River Cartwright working together. Those two are just a real highlight. I just love the premise of this show. And, you know, it's sold as a drama thriller on IMDb. And I note, Dan, as a quick side note, that the genres on IMDb's website remain the same as they are. But if you look at the genres in the app of IMDb, they now go into mega detail. But one of the genres I might throw in there is comedy, but light touch. But this show, as much of a drama and a thriller as it is, makes me laugh so much that it's almost as important for me as the drama itself.
I think Gary Oldman's character has just such a dry wit throughout this. He's kind of someone who never really intends to be funny, but he's just got one-liner after one-liner as he kind of puts people in their place. And he kind of becomes such a, you know, a lovable character who you wouldn't expect to kind of connect with so much. I think the one interesting thing about season two is I feel like they've really given the wider cast of MI5 agents more kind of airtime. I think in season two, they've all kind of got their own missions. There's a bit more kind of backstory around romances and career aspirations, and everyone's ultimately trying to sort of work their way out of Slough House. And I think this, it's good because it kind of rounds out the cast, it rounds out the sort of storytelling. There's much more depth to it. It's a tricky show to talk about, but it's such a fun watch.
Yeah, it is a fun watch, and it is perfect for watching with your parents. It's just got all the mixes. There's, you know, his character defines that genre of, there's a bit of a, you know, his sort of Tinker Tailor. There's a bit of there's a bit of Bond, you know, with the whole MI5 thing there, obviously. And I think, you know, To your point around how he sort of cuts people down to size, his characters, if you're familiar with the character Bricktop from Snatch, there's a little bit of that there. There's a great pair of glasses he wears as well, Dan. There's also an element of Columbo about him, and not just because he's got the long trench coat that looks like him, but he's, you know, he looks unprepared, but he's actually 100% switched on. Another character I really, really enjoy in this, and I would say it's one of her best performances, is Diana Taverner, played by Christian Scott Thomas. I love that dynamic that they have between the two of them. But yeah, the whole genre, the style, the dropouts, the dirty office, just it's superb. It's entertaining. And of course, with the Apple TV production, it is top quality. It just looks and plays to a movie quality at some points.
I think they really throw up some interesting kind of challenges too, right? So if you imagine this kind of like misfit group of spies who have kind of been delegated to the backbenches, you know, they often are uncovering some pretty big events, and there's a big event that happens in this story, and they have to escalate it all the way up to Kristen Scott Thomas's character. And, you know, there's a real sort of like moments of, do you believe these people that have kind of like have made stuff up all along the way? You've got national security on one hand, you've got idiots on the other. It's like, what do you do with that information? And the fallout of some of these decisions, it's just fascinating to watch. And I think it's cool to watch an MI5 type show that isn't sort of full James Bond all the time. This is a bit more about kind of like the homeland security side of looking after the UK.
Yeah, I think the Britishness about it is maybe something I've not talked about enough, is that because the quality, the setup, the look and feel of it comes across as if it were a US show, but it's all based in London, so all of the accents and all the rest of it. But there's something, I don't know that there's a UK equivalent in any way, shape or form of this type of genre without, you know, like I said before, without diving into like a, I don't know, a movie like a genre movie. It's very much a unique look and feel for what it is. I cannot recommend this one enough. I do love how he's always, you know, Oldman's got holes in his socks and, you know, leaves a stench everywhere he sits. It's very, very unglamorous. The characters that sort of behind the scenes, you know, on the computers doing the different things, they all come together well. There's some real good casting in this second season. Jonathan Pryce again coming in. He's always a good watch. There's a lot here. And this for me was season one, was number 8 in my top 10 TV of 2022. Mm-hmm. So is this a show for you that would be in contention for you for...
Oh, it's a tough one. Like it possibly might be. I think I've got some very, very hard calls to make over the coming, I guess, couple of weeks. I think a sign that this is a good show, though, is so season 3 has just dropped off Slow Horses. And, you know, it's going week by week, but we just rolled straight on into season 3, nice. which is always exciting. And I think, so season 2 obviously can't be top 10 because it's a 2022.
I just spotted that.
Yes, but season 3, like it's not quite going to be finished, so it might miss the cutoff for this year. But still, regardless, it's still a fantastic show. It still would be a top recommendation.
You'd be able to get 4 out of the 6 episodes in before we get put into our, you know, when we go into lockdown and we get put into the room and the doors are locked and you're not allowed out until you choose 10.
And then they release the smoke from the chapel, the blue and purple smoke.
Just to let people know.
To let us out. Look, I could maybe make it into, like, without seeing the full season, it could maybe make it into an honourable mention, but I just feel like my list is so full at the moment. I don't know.
Very good. Very good. There we go. That's Slow Horses on Apple TV. Dan, as you said, that was an unscheduled watch of the week for us, the one that we'd had advertised, as we do each week in our Discord community. And you can see what that is by clicking on the link in the show notes. The one we advertised was the second season of The Lazarus Project. Now, as always, we will be talking full spoilers, but As a bit of an overview, the Lazarus Project is a top secret organization dedicated to preventing mass extinction events. So they've got the ability to go back in time and try again so that the world doesn't end. So if they're worried that, you know, that North Korea are going to launch, let's go back in time and stop that from happening. Or if there's a big disease spreading, let's go back. Or if there's an asteroid, let's go back. And the real gist of it is that they can make time go backwards, but they don't travel back in time per se. They take their memories with them so they can travel back in time and tell themselves, you know, don't bother watching, you know, don't X-mas. Bother watching Xmas, or, you know, it's not worth it. They've already, they can't do that. They've already done it and they're taking their memory with them. And so, you know, just like I was talking about with Slow Horses, the Lazarus Project season 1 was number 6 on my top 10 series last year, which is really getting up there. And Dan, just as I took on your recommendations for Succession and Ozark, I recall that you took on a couple of my recommendations and you dove straight into The Lazarus Project season one earlier this year. What are you thinking for season two this time around? Because we go in a bit of a different direction, don't we?
Yeah, so I think, so this is a real sleeper TV show, I reckon. I feel like not enough people are aware or watching this TV show. And I don't know what I'm basing that on. I just feel like it's, I don't hear people talking about it. Mm. Often if you recommend it to people, people have never heard of the show. Season one was fantastic. I feel like season two, you can tell budgets increased, storytelling's increased, complexity's increased. I think they've really kind of, I don't know whether season two is necessarily better for me, but season two has definitely taken it to a whole new level. I think it's a lot more complicated. There's a lot more kind of threads. There's a lot more kind of deep thinking. Like one of our most popular episodes of the Half Measures podcast is titled "You Can't Play Animal Crossing While Watching Bosch," and you text that to me like you actually can't. You can't play Animal Crossing while watching The Lazarus Project because there is. Anytime there's time travel, I feel like it always puts my brain into overdrive. Like I have to kind of loosely hold the concept because as soon as I start overthinking it, like it starts to kind of like gears start to crunch and it all falls apart. But I think this is a show that you can follow. I wouldn't say I always am fully like cognizant of what's actually going on, but I always have sort of the bare bones of the story, and I think there's such great action, there's such great storytelling, such a great cast, really diverse cast as well, and I think they just pump up the storyline to a bit of a different level. I really enjoyed season two. How about you?
Yeah, I would be on board with everything you said there. I feel like it is very complex. There are, you know, this season we have so many different cycles repeating that I would also be lying if I understood all of it. But I was happy to watch. No, as you said, that cognizance, I love that I didn't understand exactly what was going on, but I got the gist of what they were trying to do. And just as a sort of like peek behind the curtain, there was one episode where we made it halfway through and then we were really tired, so we turned it off and we came back like the next day, or maybe it was the day after, I don't know, but press play and it was, you know, sometimes when you're like, oh, the streaming service hasn't stopped at the right place. It's jumped back again. Mm. We're like, we've seen this. And then ever so slightly, the scene would change. And you're like, oh, okay, no, we haven't. But it was like, it really play with your mind. It's not the sort of show to sort of watch halfway through and then jump back in because you think, oh, haven't we seen this? Because you'd be replaying a scene several times over. And I like that they changed it up like you. I don't think it could just be a show about trying to reset the world each time something went wrong, because obviously that's a great sci-fi concept. But if you do it week in, week out, it no longer holds your attention. And I really liked it when we had multiples of the same person in the same room. So just like I talked about with Doctor Who, with multiple David Tennants and multiple Catherine Tates talking to each other, the same thing here with The Lazarus Project. It really adds a layer of complexity. There's always great humor in those moments where you've got the same character in the room talking to themselves, and that's another thing that I thought this second season took it to the next level really, really well. I just thought they really pumped up the humor. I thought they really cranked it up. I thought it was always well done. It never took me out of the moment. It was still a serious show, but some of the moments where they just had a bit of a laugh about things was really, really well done.
Yeah, I think one of the things I almost like it from season one, one of the main characters, Shiv Reddy, I really enjoyed his character. And I think it was frustrating in the second season to not have, like, because depending on what happens to you as time is being reset. Say, for example, with Shiv's character, like if you get hurt or injured, then, and that's where kind of the next loop starts, then you'll always be hurt and injured when the loop restarts until they kind of get it sorted. And it's some of those characters who we were used to as maybe more of a main character in season one almost kind of took a bit of a backseat. In saying that, it's such an interesting cast of people that you didn't notice it too much. But every time I did see some of these characters, I was like, oh, I wish we had sort of more of them sort of coming to the scene.
Yeah. I think cast-wise, it's worth noting Papa Isido, he as a lead, I think, is absolutely terrific. He's really good. I enjoyed him last year in season two of The Capture as well as this. I think he's good. I think Anjil Mohindra, I think she's also exceptional. We've seen her in Vigil, in Bodyguard, Doctor Who. She's been in a number of things, and she's really, really good here. I just think they all work well together. And the other one who I have to give shout out is Tom Burke as Rebrov. I absolutely love him. He's the main character from CB Strike, and I thought his role was beefed up this season. And yeah, but it's Papa Sido who's the driving force, and his character is, it's sort of his narrative for most of it, and the relationship with his partner and the complexities of that. And yeah, it's really clever. You just have to stop and think occasionally, thinking, how have they done this? And then you sort of connect the dots and go, oh yeah, no, that makes sense. But yeah, it's you don't have time to look at your phone while watching this show.
No. Look, I think if you like sci-fi, you like a bit of time travel,
that's it.
You're looking for something fresh. The fact that there's already two seasons, this is highly recommended. Is this something that would appear on your potential list again this year, Paul?
Yeah, it's in the mix for a potential. And just looking at some of the episode ratings in general, the episode ratings seem to be higher than season one as well. But you're right, it has flown under the radar. I've not been speaking to anyone. You know, I've got my small council of people I talked about shows. No one seems to have been picking up the show. It's on Neon here in New Zealand, which, you know, you and I love Neon, but obviously that is a platform which isn't perhaps as commonplace as others. So I think that also doesn't do it any favours. But yeah, I agree with you. I wonder, did they take the complexity a little too far? I don't know. We talked about it with things like Dark, you know, where is it a bit too far? I talked about that with Bodies. I don't know. But I think, like you say, if you like sci-fi, action thriller, bit of humour thrown in and throw all that against a London backdrop, then yeah, I think The Lazarus Project is one I would definitely recommend for you.
I actually think the humour almost kind of like, I'm okay with it being a bit more complicated because the humour kind of brings it back down to be like, hey, look, we're just having a bit of fun here.
That's it.
If it was kind of more in that dark realm where it's super complex, then I'd maybe have some questions. But look, I think they've definitely set it up, I think, for another season, which will be interesting to see what direction they take it in. I'll definitely be here for it. As we've said, fantastic show. All the guns for me.
Very good. Yeah, I would go all the guns as well. And as I say, that is in New Zealand, available on Neon. Next week, our watch of the week, our scheduled watch of the week, who knows, there could be another surprise, you never know, but that will be Welcome to Wrexham season 2, which is available to watch in New Zealand on Disney Plus. And if you want to see the schedule ahead, again, just click on the Discord link in the show notes. Next week will be our final regular podcast of the year, actually, Dan, I've realised. And then we move straight into our two-part special, which will, of course, will be our top 10 TV list for 2023.
I must get my analyst on to crunching the data,
yeah,
making some proposals. I'll review it. They'll probably have to recut it. But yeah, that is that's coming around fast. I can't believe we're here again. It just feels like just yesterday we were talking about top 10s.
This year has gone exceptionally fast. But for this week, though, Dan, what are you, and I've got a feeling I know where you might go with this, at least based off the movies, but what was your pick of the week?
I think it's going to be Slow Horses. I think there's just something about that series which I feel like, I kind of feel like I was dragging my feet and watching it, and I don't know why, because as soon as I put it on, it just felt like you're back around some friends, you're back around some of this great cohort of characters. It's got many a laugh. It kind of ticks all the boxes for me. So, yeah, Slow Horses, season 2, pick of the week. What about you?
Yeah, well, tough week. I mean, you got the Dark Knight in there. It's always going to be tough. But, again, just to give it that sort of credit, where credit's due in terms of where I see it, I absolutely love Wild Blue Yonder. I thought it was just really, really clever, and I think it really holds up as an individual episode that you could just go away and watch and try and just play the game of trying to see if you can guess who's who. So yeah, Doctor Who, Wild Blue Yonder for me, pick of the week.
Very, very good. Shall I take us on over to the news desk?
Let's see what's in store.
All right. So we've had the new trailer drop for Furiosa. I don't know if you've had a chance to check this out yet.
I saw the still. I haven't watched the trailer because this is one that's definitely on my list, and I'm trying real hard. I'm trying real hard to not watch trailers then.
I think this is probably a good one too. I think, like, I have watched this trailer. I think it will be the last trailer I watch because I think I want to go into this as blind as possible. But looks like it's going to be interesting. Obviously starring Anya Taylor-Joy and Chris Hemsworth. So, look, I think this is I'm looking forward to seeing the background story of Furiosa. So check that out if you are keen, but maybe hold off if you're keen and want to have some surprises. What else have we got here? So Cruel Intentions, the TV series, is officially a go at Prime Video. So Cruel Intentions, obviously, it's been a book. There's been various movies of this over the year. It was very popular back in 1999 with Sarah Michelle Gellar and Ryan Phillippe and Reese Witherspoon. So we'll be interesting to see what they do with this as a TV show. I'm sure more news will come out in the coming months. It's been a bit of a time for trailers, so if you're a fan of the Halo TV show, Season 2 is getting its first trailer and a February 2024 premiere date, so that is in the not-too-long distant future. We've had a new trailer for House of the Dragon Season 2, which I was a huge fan of that TV show, definitely a top 10 TV show last year. So I remember sort of complaining at the time it was a long wait for the next season, but now it feels like it's probably less than 6 months away, which is very exciting. And we've also got a little bit of news come out about another Prime Video video game TV show, which is going to be based on the Fallout video games, which, looking at some of the stills that are starting to come out, it should be a very interesting post-apocalyptic series, and I'm sure it will be a bit of fun. What else we got here? So two other things. So a couple of Disney Pixar movies that released during COVID came straight to streaming. They're actually going to be going back to theatres in 2024, and those movies are Turning Red, Luca, and Soul. And so they're all going to be coming out next year if you are a fan of those. But you can also check them out on Disney Plus right now. And then final bit of news for me, Paul. Bit of a quirky one. So Yellowstone creator Taylor Sheridan is suing Kohlhauser's coffee brand. So Kohlhauser is RIP. He has a relatively new coffee brand and apparently looks way too similar to one of Taylor Sheridan's brands. So I couldn't think of anything worse than trying to sue RIP from Yellowstone. That feels like a real bad day in anyone's book. So we'll see what's going to happen here. It just kind of sparks more chaos in the Yellowstone realm. But we'll see what happens. Any news on your end?
I find that astonishing. I also find it really sad, you know, just the...
Yeah.
I like the idea that they're one big happy family behind the scenes, and it's a real good time. And all the stuff that's happened with Kevin Costner and now Kohlhauser,
the bunkhouse, you know,
it's a shame. But and also because the series hasn't finished, it's not like this was something we've wrapped and now we're having arguments. We're still releasing. So anyway, there we go. What can you do? Just a couple of things for me. Firstly, this week we had the 2023 New Zealand Television Awards for New Zealand created content. This year there was a number of different categories and big awards. I won't go through them all, but the one I was wanting to just call out, the big one of the year, which is always the New Zealand On Air Best Drama of the Year, that went to The Gone, which was a show that I reviewed on the podcast a couple of months ago, a show that really, really was, as I said at the time, the best New Zealand drama I've ever seen. And so to see it win that, I thought was well and truly well deserved. The only other news that I was going to bring in, and this is because I'm obsessed with this franchise, is the promos and the interviews and all the paraphernalia has started to happen for Beverly Hills Cop 4, Axel F. Eddie Murphy starting to do a number of interviews about it. It's coming out early next year on Netflix, so accessibility is going to be really good there. 1984, 2024, 40 years after the original, it just seems unthinkable to me. And in some of the interviews, Eddie Murphy's been talking about how he said it was just one of the hardest movies he's ever had to film, because it's still action. But he was in his 20s when he filmed Beverly Hills Cop, which is just incredible. Amazing. Now to sort of to see Eddie Murphy, you know, now just much, much older, filming the fourth one. So I look forward to that when it comes out next year. And on that, Dan, I will jump straight into Mailbag and just keep it on the Beverly Hills Cop 4 news story, because social media managers did get a bit excited about all of the news and posted on our Instagram about the new movie. And this post was immediately shared by John Ashton, aka Sergeant Taggart, from the original trilogy, who is also, you know, starring again opposite Eddie Murphy in the new movie. He also follows us on Instagram, which I can't tell you how much joy that gives me. He's a favourite all the way back to the original. So thank you for the share of our post, Sergeant Taggart. Now, Dan, I want to take you over, if I may, to what I think you coined the Bruce Gray Memorial this week, with a question from Sir Bruce himself, who wrote to us on X, saying he saw a question trending on Twitter or X today, and he thought he'd ask the experts in the field what their choice would be. Question is, if you were murdered and you could choose or assign any TV detective or sleuth to find your killer, who would you pick?
I think, and I've got a backup if you don't allow this, but I'm thinking of going with Jackson Lamb.
Oh, that's awesome. Of course I allow. That's brilliant.
I feel like, you know, he's going to be able to sort of like just cut to the chase. He's not going to be kind of put off by anyone trying to detract him from the sort of murder at hand. And he's going to leave no stone unturned, and he's going to upset some people in the process. And I think that's great. What about you?
So good. Well, it's really interesting, because I feel really lame giving this answer, because in the post that he sent to us, he included a GIF of the character who I would have naturally gone with, and I can't help myself, and that is Columbo, because he's just always been, as I've said many times, up there with Bosch in terms of my top two American cops detectives of all time. So, you know, has a Jackson Lamb look about him with the jacket, looks disheveled, but is so switched on, so intelligent, and would definitely get to the bottom of it. So yeah, I would have Peter Falk as Columbo, finding out who did the dirty on me. Would be interested to hear from anyone listening as to who they would assign, you know, what detective they would rate as being the best in that field.
Can I give you my backups as well?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you've got backups. Yes. You've really come to the thing.
So my backup was going to be either Bosch, because I feel like that's just in general, like another person who's going to not let this, you know, turn into a cold case, you know, get off your ass, start knocking on doors, he's your guy. And then my other option, I had three, was going to be Reacher. And, you know, we're about to come into a new season of Jack Reacher. And I thought, you know, military police, like, he's not only going to get this case solved, there's going to be some carnage in the way, and I appreciate it.
Very nice. I my close backup, I guess, would be David Jason as Frost. But in truth, I just want Del Boy to be on the case, because it would just be hilarious. Nice. But yeah, great question, Bruce. Thank you for putting it through to us. Also had a question come in also on X in response to our review of Shrinking a couple of weeks ago, the Harrison Ford comedy therapy show. Had one person, Andy, respond to us on X with a question about season two, saying, as you're a fan of the show, who would you most like to see make a guest cameo on season two? To which my response to that then was, I think it would be kind of cool if Mark Hamill was able to come in and do a really clever, really subtle cameo seeing him and Harrison Ford opposite each other in a therapist comedy situation with Mark Hamill coming in, maybe with sort of daddy issues about, you know, that would then stretch the analogy a little bit too far with Vader. It might be a bit too obvious, but it might cheapen the show, but that would be, it was just a really random question, but it really did make me think, oh, if I could choose, I probably would do that. What about you?
I haven't seen Shrinking, I was also thinking then that Star Wars path, but I was wondering, maybe is it someone like Adam Driver? So it's kind of like, you know, yes. Like just for a classic, like,
that's
dad son situation, could be a funny moment without being too on the nose. Like,
yeah,
because I feel like Hamill's like, it's going to be,
that is on the nose, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Whereas Driver isn't. So, no, that's nice. I think that's a better answer. I would like him to be called Ben, though, just so we can hear Harrison shouting one more time from a distance, Ben!
Yeah, perfect, perfect.
Very good. What else have I got here? I thought there was something. Oh, no, just the peak performance. That's right. So last week, peak performance came through as suggested by a Patreon producer for Vin Diesel. We had Christina from Wellington went with Fast and the Furious and Guardians of the Galaxy. Glenn from Wainui Amata went with Riddick. We had Michael from North Carolina, 3-2-1 of Fast and the Furious. Fast and the Furious and Fast and the Furious. There was no differentiation as to which movies were in which place, just simply his character of Dom was his 3-2-1. I'm forced to acknowledge that this, of course, when you have this many peak performance nomination, it does trigger the rewatch clause. And finally, we had Samara from Taranaki. She went where the peak performance had to be Fast and the Furious. Let's go with the first one was her response in terms of which was the best. Notable mention. No, it's a notable mention, not honourable, was Triple X. Totally love that. And another runner-up, because she can, would have to be Pitch Black and Riddick. And she was gutted that they didn't finish the trilogy. And now, because she's really breaking the rules, it would be totally rude not to mention his role as Groot in Guardians of the Galaxy as well.
There's so many rules broken here, Paul. Like honourable mentions with like multiple movies.
Notable mentions.
We're going to have a word with the Patreon producers about this.
On another note, our lawyers have reached out to Paddy Fox, who did not respond this week. That is our mailbag this week, then.
Wow, that's I'm in shock that we haven't heard from Paddy. He's a staple of the show. Paul, shall we jump into our peak performance?
Indeed. So much like our Watch of the Week, each week we choose someone from the movie and TV industry and try and pick out what we think is their best work. This week we're jumping into the director's chair and we are going to pick out our picks for M. Night Shyamalan. How did I go with the pronunciation?
Shyamalan?
I don't know. I just tried to say it quickly.
Okay. Great call. I think for me, I knew my peak performance. I was a bit mixed on what was going to be my honourable mention, but I think I've narrowed it down to 2004's The Village. I think this is a 2004, you know, full spoilers. You know, the thing with a M. Night Shyamalan movie is you can only really watch them once often because it's kind of once they've had the big reveal, it's kind of lost. Like you can go back to see whether you can spot things that kind of connect it, but it certainly loses a little bit of its rewatchability. This is a great story. Great Joaquin Phoenix, Sigourney Weaver, Adrian Brody, great cast about sort of a religious community kind of living together, and you're sort of led to believe it's in the very olden days. Some great twists at the end, but for my actual peak performance, I'm going to go with 1999's The Sixth Sense. This movie blew my mind at the time. It gave me chills like you wouldn't imagine. I remember I was working at a movie theater, I think I was sort of around this time, and just loved sort of going in and watching everyone sort of see the big aha moment. And such a different type of role for for Bruce Willis. So definitely a peak for me. How about you?
Interesting choices. I have to admit, I find this really hard. I feel like there's a lot of contenders that I like for a lot of reasons. And I honestly could, you know, I know what you mean about once you've seen it once, the thing is gone. But sometimes I'm like, I could go a rewatch because I'd want to spot that thing. Like I spoke to someone recently, or I listened to a podcast of someone recently who talked about The Sixth Sense and said that they saw it. They saw what was happening right from the start, so they never had that magic moment, and that I'd be gutted if that was me. But I really could rewatch some of his movies. I really rate what he brings, you know, even when things don't go 100%. And I've actually just been looking through. I realize a lot of movies I haven't even seen or heard of, like Glass and other things. But anyway, honorable mention for me is 2008's The Happening, and I remember a lot of reviews at the time coming out playing on the title saying, oh, nothing happens, or what happened, or what is happening, you know. they really went to town on that, and I really got a lot out of this, and I found it another brave decision, something unique, a really fascinating M. Night project. And I would also say, because, you know, Matt Wahlberg was good in this, but Zooey Deschanel in this, I would say, putting aside her New Girl, which is just an astonishing TV show, and she's a great character in that, I would say this would be definitely her best performance, certainly in terms of serious performance. I thought she really was quite memorable in this movie as well. So, yeah, so I would go honorable mention of The Happening. But my peak performance is your honorable mention, Dan. That's 2004's The Village. I remember, again, sort of hearing a lot of negative things about this, and I sort of looked at the post and I thought, oh, I'm not sure if it's me, but I'd watched and loved Signs. And that's not me trying to get a sneaky other mention in there, but, you know, that movie, and I thought, okay, I'm going to give this a go, and I just thought it was superb, just like you talked about in terms of, you know, the cast, superb straight away. It's Sigourney Weaver, Joaquin Phoenix, but the movie itself was just, it was kind of terrifying. It was very tense. It was one of those movies that kept your attention all throughout, because you knew you couldn't look away for a second. And also, you know, especially when there was some of the walking through the village, it was so intense. You were almost too scared to look away. It was a very, very powerful watch. 6.6 out of 10, its rating there. And I've noticed that with the exception of The Sixth Sense, most of his movies are sort of languishing in the fives or the sixes. And I think it's harsh, because I really think this is a good movie. So that's my peak performance. If you haven't seen The Village, I strongly recommend it be one you watch late at night, curtains drawn, phone off the hook.
Mm-hmm. Look, there's a great back catalogue of movies in here, especially if you haven't seen them. In fact, I would almost go into many of them with no reviews, no pretext, and just jump into it. But yeah, great choices and great shout for peak performance. I guess that brings us to the end of another episode, the second to last official episode of Half Measures for 2023.
It does indeed. Thank you, as always, for listening in, and do get in touch if you've got a peak performance for M. Night. If you have any TV detectives that you would like to solve your murder, or anything that you want to talk about, any of the things that we've reviewed this week, please get in touch at halfmeasurespodcast.com or on social media.
Also, a very special shout out to our Patreon producers, Samara Whiting King, Diana Kanawa, Trisha Brady, and Michael Chalmers. If you too would like to become a patron of the show, then you can find those details in the show notes below. But until next week, everyone, adios.